This podcast is brought to you by Homul Casino Resort, the player's place.
A couple of base running blunders in last night's game. Actually, one from each team. Welcome back. Ben and Pauly with you on 97.3 The Fan. Padres made one in the fifth inning, I thought, because Jake Cronenworth, remember, on the double steal attempt thrown out at the plate with two outs, Luis Arraez was up. And I actually love the decision. I think it was Jose Iglesias who stole second. And, you know, he was going to be safe by a mile. That would have put two runners in scoring position, chance to tie the game with one single from Luis Arraez. I love that aggression and that opportunity. I don't know if Jake just kind of read it wrong. I mean, they did throw through, but keep in mind, remember in spring training, Padres like pulled that double steal off, I don't know, like seven times successfully in spring training. And I go,
right,
my goodness gracious, is this going to be the biggest weapon for the Padres offense all season long, is the first and third double steal, at home, because they kept pulling it off. But that was spring training. You know, teams remember, you know, they've seen this. It's the scouting report is on the Padres. When they've got first and third, runner at first goes, catcher throws through, there's a good chance that the runner at third is going to try to score. And, you know, the Diamondbacks were ready for it. You know, they got the old step forward at second base. Good throw home. Jake was out by a solid 2 or 3 feet. Wasn't that close. And the Padres wasted what could have been their best scoring opportunity. That could have cost them the game at that point. So you're going to have to be careful. You don't want to run into outs on the base paths later in the season. Certainly in a playoff game, that's a mistake you can't afford to make. But I thought the biggest base running mistake came with Adrian Morejon on the mound. I believe it was in the seventh inning when they had the Diamondbacks had a runner on second and one out. And it was James McCann.
James.
There was a catcher named Brian McCann as
there
well.
Was.
This is James McCann. And Laureano, fly ball to left. I don't know that I've ever seen a runner tagging up from second to third get thrown out on a relay from left field. If you can't make it when they can't even get the throw all the way there to third base, you should not be going in
right.
That situation. I don't know the decision-making process that went on there. Obviously, McCann is not a speedster. You're already in scoring position. There's already going to be two outs. You don't make the third out at third base, and you certainly don't make it on a fly ball to left field if you can't even make it when they needed to, you know, make a nice turn. And it was Iglesias, I believe.
It was a really hell
good,
of a play.
Really good relay.
Yeah.
I mean, Iglesias, his hands are amazing. He is able to grab, catch a ball, and it is gone before.
It's so
quick. He is so quick at that.
Yeah.
You see it when he's making, double play turns, when he's, you know, filling in for Manny on the left side of the infield, how quickly he gets the ball out of his glove and throws it. So that was pretty impressive to see, but I'm sure that Torrey Lovello was not too happy when McCann came back to the dugout. I was like, what are you doing, man? You got to be 100% sure you're going to make it. And there was no way you could have been 100% sure you were going to make it at third base on that play. So, you know, a little benefit. That helped Adrian Morejon actually stay in the game and go that next inning and face the top of the Diamondbacks order, because I think he only threw like 4 or 5 pitches. He'd already gone the day before. I'm sure Mike Schilt was going, hey, get these two outs. You know, your job is done. But then when he was so efficient and got the double play and it was out of the inning, it's like, all right, well, let's have you throw another inning. And he ended up throwing another inning and got the win. It's his ninth win of the season out of the bullpen.
He only threw 13 pitches.
Two whole innings.
13 pitches, 12 for strikes.
super, super efficient work as
yeah.
well. From Adrian Morejon, who got, you know, quick outs. And, I think I saw this morning in Kevin Acey's newsletter, the record for a Padres relief pitcher for wins in a season is 11. So he's only two off of that record now. Not that wins are a huge stat, but they're actually almost...
I know for a fact Morejon has vultured at least a few of those.
That is true. So you give up a lead like by one, and then they score and come back, you actually take a win away from
right.
someone else. But it also means that you've been in a lot of close games, and you've probably done your job. And, yeah, you get lucky that the offense happened to score when you were there. But, yeah, Adrian Morejon, no
Morejon
complaints.
Was efficient, but Jason Adam was nasty.
He was.
Four batters, 4 strikeouts. What more can you possibly ask for from
reliever? And then Mason Miller to bounce back after giving up the 2-run home run to Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in game 1 of the series. No, game 2. That was the night after. Yeah, that's right. It was the night after. Game two of the series. Yeah,
had the lead.
And then instead of throwing fastballs, he comes back with his slider, 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 and puts away Gurriel. Just shows you the kind of weapons that, that Mason Miller has. He looked like he was intent on a little bit of revenge. Wasn't happy about giving up the lead the day before.
Yeah.
Did give up the walk, but ended up striking out the side in the ninth inning to lock down his first save with the San Diego Padres, his 21st of the season. So lots of different weapons in the bullpen for Mike Schilt. And as we mentioned earlier, Padres then picked up a game on the L.A. Dodgers, who lost 5-3 to the St. Louis Cardinals.
They lost?
They did lose, yeah.
They didn't win.
They did not win.
Okay, just want to make sure.
All right, that may come up a little bit.
A little bit of a tease for
Don't Do This in a moment.
Good Lord.
But the Cardinals go into L.A. after dropping 2-3 in San Diego. Thank you, St. Louis. They win 2-3 in Los Angeles, so the Padres pull within two games now of the lead in the National League West. It's the closest they've been to first place since June 13th. They were 9 games back at one point, but since then have picked up 7 games in the standings on the LA Dodgers. They also moved 1 game ahead of the New York Mets for the second wild card spot. So the Guardians beat the Mets 4-1. Juan Soto broke up a no-hitter by Gavin Williams with one out in the ninth inning.
I watched it. I flipped over, got the alert. Oh, there's no hitter happening. Okay, cool. Yeah, let's take a look. One out, I think. And then Juan Soto just hits a missile to the furthest part of the field, straightaway center field. And I actually thought the ball had stayed in. I thought he might have even gotten his glove on it. Nah, the ball
was just bounced up
10 feet higher.
Yeah, the wall higher and then came back on. But, you know, outstanding performance by that. Now, the pitch count was getting really high there, but they wanted to give him a chance at the no-hitter. So he stayed in there. But the Guardians win the game. The Mets are really scuffling. There's a national radio host who I follow on social media. His name's Jason Smith. You might have heard him before. He's a Mets fan. He's kind of a doomer Mets fan, but I swear to God, he tweeted in the second inning, "I wouldn't be surprised if the Mets got no hit today." I mean, he nailed it right away. And then he's like following throughout the game, like, "See, all right, five, there's 7. All right, there's 8. You could just like see it. That's how down in the dumps the New York Mets are right now. Like, people are watching the second inning. This is a no-hitter. And then it almost comes to pass.
Yeah.
That they go into the ninth inning before it's broken up. So the Padres solidifying their wild card position because the Cubs also beat the Reds 6-1. So Cubs avoiding the 3-game sweep. Cincinnati still playing well, but they fall back 4 games behind the Padres and 3 games behind the Mets now for the third and final wild card spot. And the upshot is on FanGraphs this morning, the Padres now have an over 92% chance of making the postseason, according to FanGraphs. Remember, about a week ago, right before the trade deadline, that was hovering around 49-50%. That is how important this last week has been. The trade deadline,
no kidding,
followed by 4 wins in 6 games, followed by, you know, the Mets and the Dodgers struggling a little bit. It has completely upended the playoff odds in the National League, where the Padres now pretty good shape going forward. Certainly nothing assured at this point with, you know, almost 50 games still remaining, but they have absolutely probably their biggest week in terms of a jump they're going to get in playoff positioning is this last 6 days for the San Diego Padres.
We talked about it a little bit yesterday, the division race. Like, have you let yourself begin to go there now? Like,
yeah.
I think I have too. Like, in the last few days, really, in particular, like, I'm thinking, like, look, of course, the work is still cut out for you. If you're the Padres, you know what is needed, but you're there. Like, we kept saying, like, for the last couple of weeks, just be within 2-4 games back of in the division race when you have, what, 6 games in, like, a week span against the Dodgers?
I'm thinking about it enough that one of the questions on the roundtable, and if you want to chime in now just for a minute or two, is, how do you think the Padres now compare with the Dodgers roster-wise?
I saw the clip from Ken Rosenthal earlier this week, and he was talking about after the trade deadline with these acquisitions. He goes, this Padres roster is a roster that not only can compete for a World Series. And I wanted to see some results, I think, since Thursday, since acquiring these new players. Just see some results, see what the team looks like before you start, like, mentally letting yourself get set up for disappointment and finishing in second again in the NL West. Like, after watching a few of these teams, these games with this new roster, I'm thinking there's no reason this team can't make a run at the division. Absolutely no reason.
I think for me, let's go the major, you know, starting pitching, bullpen, lineup, defense, managing. I mean, like the major tenets, like team for team. Quickly, sure. Here, let's just go through it, Paulie. We got a couple of minutes. Let's start with starting pitching. I would give the Dodgers, as they're getting healthier, the edge in starting pitching over the San Diego Padres. Not a massive edge.
It's a slight edge. I think that's fair.
But with Glass now back, Snell back in the rotation, they've added Ohtani, who pitched yesterday.
It's purely quantity.
And Yamamoto has been really good. They have more top-end arms in their starting rotation than the Padres do. Now, Padres can close the gap if Michael King pitches like Michael King. And, you know, Nick Pivetta has been outstanding. Dylan Cease is the wild card. You know, if he pitches like he's capable of, Padres are really close to the Dodgers in starting pitching. If he pitches more like the first half Dylan Cease, then the Dodgers have a definite edge in starting pitching. Bullpen. Padres. I mean, Padres win that comparison over any team in baseball right now, and they win it pretty handily over the Dodgers.
Not as close as
the starting pitching. Now, it could get closer as they get guys healthier. You know, Trinan, Gratterall, you know, guys that, you know, Kirby Yates is on the IL. If Tanner Scott comes back, they could close the gap in bullpen. But right now, the Padres have the biggest edge. Defense, Padres, definitely a better defensive team than the LA Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And I think that one's a clear check mark in the Padres' favor. Lineup. This one, I think, is the toughest one to handicap. Certainly a totally different question than it was last week before the trade deadline. Right. Last week, it was Dodgers. They just were lengthier. You had more weapons at the bottom of the order. But now, with Ramon Laureano and Ryan O'Hearn and Freddie Fermin, Padres have closed the gap considerably. And with Mookie Betts, you know, potentially continuing to struggle, and Shohei Ohtani's production, while still amazing, has gone way down since he started pitching. It takes a toll on him to pitch once a week. He's still an MVP candidate, but he's not putting up the insane numbers he was. I think he's hitting like .230 since he started pitching. I think the lineup question is at least
it's a hell of a lot closer. I think it's maybe just too small a sample size with the Padres, this new roster. But my God, with the simple additions that AJ Preller was able to make, like now you got Xander Bogaerts in the 6 hole, Crony sliding down sometimes to the 8 hole in the lineup.
I think I worry about, you know, Max Muncy came back, hit a couple of home runs. If Teoscar Hernandez heats up, those guys do have a lot of, you know, postseason experience.
Well, we got a pretty good player that hasn't heated up either in Fernando Tatis Jr., who has impacted most games he's played in, but he hasn't been he hasn't been hitting particularly well, and I know that had to have been a factor into him getting really basically 2 days off.
But let me be I'll just be generous and I'll say light check mark to the Dodgers on the lineup there.
I think that's fair.
Just to be realistic. And then manager, I'm gonna run with Mike Schilt every single day, you know, as the manager in terms
of correct.
High leverage, close games. The decisions that he makes have been really, really good, especially this year. I think he's managed, you know, having an even better season than he had last year as a manager. We've seen Dave Roberts implode sometimes as a manager.
He's done. Managed his ass off last year in the postseason, like maybe better than other manager I've seen. Like he pushed every correct button last year.
Yeah, but you know,
and it resulted in
managing
a World Series
bullpen. It certainly did.
But I've seen too many times him do the exact opposite. I'm going to give it to Schilt as well.
So you know, ultimately, out of those five, that's three check marks I gave to the Padres and two to the Dodgers. Now, that means they're incredibly close, but I do think when you match up the rosters now, it's not like it was in spring training, and you go, the Dodgers roster is just so much stronger than any other team in baseball. You know, 1-26, you're not going to find anything like it. Now, all of a sudden, it just feels like the teams are very close. So ultimately, the division will be decided by things like execution and, you know, who gets on a hot stretch? Whose star player, you know, gets insanely hot? Will it be Manny Machado? Will it be Shohei Ohtani? Will it be Freddie Freeman? Will it be Fernando Tatis Jr.? They can put their team on their back, and, you know, who's going to reel off a 7-game winning streak? Who's going to have a bad week where they go 2-5? I mean, that's really what's going to end up probably deciding the NL West now over the last, you know, month and a half of the season is little things, because I think ultimately the big picture, the teams are quite evenly matched at this point, you know, in 2025.
Yeah, it's that tough point in the season where, of course, like I saw somebody earlier, forgive me, don't remember their name, who it was, but somebody was like, hey, you can't look past the Red Sox. Of course not. I mean, the Padres could go out and get swept this weekend. The Dodgers could win all three of their games, and all of a sudden you're like, what were we thinking going for the division? Oh, let's just settle for the wild card. Of course, that could happen. And I don't think we are looking past the Boston Red Sox. We're talking more bigger picture here. When you're only two games out here on August 7th, why shouldn't the division be a realistic goal right now?
No, it's not just a realistic goal. It should be what the Padres are chasing. I think it's worth chasing. Some would say, what does it matter? You're in the playoffs. Wild card teams sometimes do better. You know, the teams with the bye sit around and they don't have good series. I don't buy into that logic. I think if the Padres have a chance to win the division, they should go all out to try to win the division, try to finish in the top two, get a bye, avoid a wild card series. Because it doesn't matter who you're playing in the wild card series. Right now, if the season ended today, Padres would face the Cubs at Wrigley Field in a best of three series. I don't want any part of that. I can avoid that, I don't want any part of that. I get it. The Padres won in New York against the Mets in a wild card series and went on to the World Series. You can do it. You know, the Rangers were a wild card team. They won the World Series a couple of years ago. The Diamondbacks were a wild card team. They got to the World Series. It's absolutely possible. But if I can avoid a dangerous series in Chicago or having to go to Philadelphia or having to go to Los Angeles, I mean, it's possible the wild card, you know, the Dodgers could end up in a wild card series as well. I don't want to. I mean, who wants any part of that in a best of three? So if you can win your division and finish in the top two, at the very least finish third or fourth and at least host that wild card series, you absolutely are going for that.
Well, as competitive as these two teams are going to be down the stretch, you got to think if the Padres find themselves in a position to win the National League West come the end of September, they're going to have a real good shot at being one of those top two teams and getting that week off. And I'm with you. I know that's something that a lot of people are split on in baseball, and you know, you can talk to former or even current players. Do you want the rest? Do you not? Do you want to keep playing? I really think that the rest has to outweigh the trying to stay hot.
I agree. And right now, to do that, the Padres have already caught the Mets, so they need to catch the Dodgers, obviously, because you can't get a bye unless you win your division,
right?
And the Phillies. And if the Padres catch both of those teams, they can at least get to the number two seed. Right now, Milwaukee never loses, so they're making it very hard to catch them for the number one seed. But the two seed is very much available, and that should be the goal right now for the San Diego Padres. All right, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, don't do this. Already teased some comments from MLB Network. We may need Gloria from White Men Can't Jump to explain what was going on with Greg Amsinger on MLB Network yesterday.
This was embarrassing, and
I've got a weird story involving one of our local professional teams that we don't talk about very much, but a crazy week for the San Diego Strike Force, and there's a ton of don't do this involved.
Huh.
We'll get to all of that coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. GEG 000466. For a full list of games and rules, play to 7 Mile Casino. Visit 7milecasino.com.
Before Kelly's traffic, though, let's talk about 7 Mile Casino. No baseball today, so if you have a free evening, may I suggest making the trip down to 7 Mile Casino. Here's what you do. Go to dinner at Sammy's at 7 Mile. It's right inside the casino at Sammy's Wood Fired Pizzas. You've probably been there before one of their other locations. The one inside 7 Mile is epic. It's beautiful. They got the indoor, outdoor patio, giant patio right there on San Diego Bay. It's gorgeous, especially when the weather's hot like this. Evening meal out there would be absolutely perfect this time of year. Got their great pizzas, wood fired, got the pastas. pizzas. The chopped salad is really good. Or you can order off the 24/7 players menu, bunch of favorites like the incredible Kung Pao chicken that I always enjoy. And then after dinner, head on over to the tables and play a little California style blackjack, Texas Hold'em poker, Pai Gow or Baccarat in San Diego's best, most upscale card room. It's smoke free. It's nice in there. Comfy chairs, friendly dealers, TVs all over the place. It's intimate. You kind of go in there and you just feel comfortable. It's like you're in a nice club, you know, just a nice restaurant and bar. It's a very nice spot. I love it. It's 7 Mile Casino. Was there a couple of weeks ago. Really want you to give it a try. And the best part is you don't have to drive way out an hour into the 110 degree weather of the deep East County and, leave your car in a hot parking garage while you walk about 25 minutes to find the card room somewhere. It's right there off the 5 in Chula Vista, Bay Boulevard, west side of the freeway. Check it out today. It's 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from downtown.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
DDT on a Thursday, brought to you by Trust and Will.
Don't.
Leave your entire estate, house, kids, and life savings up to chance if and when you die.
Do.
Set up a Trust or Will online at trustandwill.com.
Yes.
Is a lot more affordable than you think. Visit trustandwill.com for more info. I didn't even prepare Paul for that. He simply just stepped in and was able to execute the don't, do, and this.
It wasn't easy, but somebody's got to do it.
Part of the program.
I'm kidding. All right, Paul, extremely easy.
Why don't you get us started?
Yeah, saw this yesterday. Woodsy sent this over, a video on social media, about a four-minute clip from MLB Network, one of their evening programs, last night. And Greg Amsinger, you have made your way on to Don't Do This this morning because, well, they were talking about the Dodgers game last night. And let me pull up the final score here just to make sure I get it absolutely accurate. I don't want to make any mistakes here. Yeah, that's right. 5-3, Benny. The Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals won the game 5-3.
Did they, though? I mean, they scored more runs. They scored the 5, and the Dodgers scored
Yeah, they got
the
3. A W next to their name. Like, they won the game 5-3. They scored more runs in 9 innings than their opponent.
Wins and losses are kind of subjective, though.
They're not, actually.
Oh, they're not.
They're not. You either win or you lose in baseball. Now, there are some other sports where you can tie, but in baseball, you win or you lose. The Dodgers lost yesterday, so I was a little confused. Just a little confused when Greg Amsinger on MLB Network said this.
First time I'm saying this all year. We just watched a team win a game that they lost.
What?
The Los Angeles Dodgers won this game, but the Cardinals won it 5-3 by the score.
What?
The key, Jake, was to see Shohei Ohtani find that ace stuff again. We knew we were going to see more length in the start than we saw all year. You'd gone 3 innings a couple times. We were expecting 4 innings. We didn't just see 4 innings. We saw a game one starter in terms of his stuff.
So the Dodgers, they won the game, even though they lost the game.
What?
I mean, I think I know what he's trying to say, that in the long run, having Shohei Ohtani back is more important than necessarily one win against the Cardinals.
There are other ways to say that. You cannot just be like, I know that the Cardinals won the game, but the Dodgers really won this game. No, they didn't.
Okay,
No, they didn't.
If Michael King comes back on Saturday and pitches like 5 really good innings and the Padres end up losing to the Red Sox, I will feel good about Michael King's performance. Right. That'll be a good sign going forward.
Michael King can shove for 5 innings. Yeah. The bullpen could come in and implode, and we lose, 6-1 or something on Saturday. If you show up on Monday and be like, well, actually the Padres really did kind of win on Saturday. No, they didn't. You can say there were some positives to take away from that game, but a loss is a loss is a loss.
Gloria, what do you think about all of this?
Sometimes when you win, you really lose. And sometimes when you lose, you really win. And sometimes when you win or lose, you actually tie. And sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose.
I just think that that is an embarrassing comment from the league ran network, MLB Network. That I just think that's
maybe the Dodgers
pathetic.
Lost, but they actually tied. Yeah, maybe that. Maybe I don't know
no,
if they actually
they
won,
lost.
But they maybe
they
lost.
They lost. I don't care if Ohtani was perfect through eight innings. If they don't have more runs than the other team when the game is completed, then they lost.
Again, I see where Greg Amsinger is trying to go. He certainly could have said it better. Here's the problem with that logic, though. Just because Shohei Ohtani threw well yesterday doesn't mean he's going to throw well.
We just watched a team win a game out. That they lost.
What? I was completely dumbfounded with that.
All right, let's move on because this story is pretty wild. It's been a while. We used to talk Strike Force every so often. People are saying, who are the Strike Force? Strike Force are San Diego's indoor football league team.
We used to have listeners that were like vehemently upset with like angry that we didn't have more Strike Force coverage.
I think we might have had some tier ones who were actually on the team because they would take anybody yes. back in the beginning. I mean, like literally anyone they could find.
We had the Strike Force and we had the San Diego, the fleet.
No, Bert Grossman was coaching the team back then. I think they went like winless in their first season, but they still kept going and they've actually gotten, you know, they've moved on from those early days. They've gotten a little bit better. They play up in Oceanside now and they're actually in the IFL playoffs. Now, here's the wild story. So they're playing the Arizona Rattlers on the road on Monday in their playoff, like, semifinals or quarterfinal matchup. The Strike Force are trailing 48-42 as time is running out. They've got the ball. They're trying to – no timeouts left. They're scrambling down the field. They're 5-4-3-2. They snap the ball. Referee throws a penalty flag, but the play continues on. They throw it. Touchdown, time expires, 48-48. The referee then goes, I'm just going to pick up the penalty flag. Even though it seemed clear that the Strike Force had committed a false start on the play. I don't know what the explanation particularly was, but they allowed the touchdown to stand. The Strike Force kicked the extra point to win 49-48. Arizona Rattlers lost their coach, lost his mind. He said,
yeah.
He said, I'm going to fire everyone that works for me. My timing staff, our game staff, somehow we've messed this up. The officials are completely against it. Here's the thing, though. The IFL did review the film from the final seconds and said, yeah, it was absolutely a penalty. It should have resulted in a 10-second runoff, the end of the game. There's no reason why the referee should have picked it up. The Arizona Rattlers win this game, they had 48-42, except we don't really have a mechanism to change the outcome of a game. So sorry, Arizona. Strike Force get to go on in the playoffs, and you have to go home. So this is a giant don't do this that actually benefited a San Diego sports team. Like a
got away with one.
I mean, think about that. If in an NFL game, and it came down to like the final play, and it would have been a false start that ended the game, but they let it stand, and later the next day, the NFL said, oh, you know what? I know the Pittsburgh Steelers actually won the game, but the Baltimore Ravens should have won the game. I mean, this would be the biggest controversy in sports history if something like that happened in an NFL game because it's a Monday night in the IFL. No one really pays attention to what's going on, but apparently the giant break for the Strike Force, who are now on to the Western Conference Championship against Vegas. Now, the Strike Force are the better seed, so they should have been hosting the final, except there's a concert this weekend at the Front Wave Arena, and they can't have access to their own arena, so now they have to play on the road on Friday instead in Vegas, and we'll try to make it into the final. Yeah,
If it's semifinal?
It's the Western Conference final, and then the winner goes on to the championship. Yes, apparently there is a Sunset Sounds with Alex Warren and special guest Paul Russell, Lynn Lapid, and Jonah Marias concert that is keeping the Strike Force from hosting their playoff game.
Padres are supposed to host Game 5 of the NLDS, but
Bad Bunny is playing at Petco Park instead. Careful, Eric Grubner, don't schedule too many concerts for late October. Could have a very bad conflict on your hands.
Well, let's get to some doo-doo this real quickly here.
DD mega doo-doo.
Now, this was Teddy Bridgewater was in Don't Do This recently, like a couple of weeks ago. But I think you need to reset that story because he really I think it was a don't do this, but he should have been a do this.
He got in trouble because he was
anytime he gets suspended,
he was being too generous with his high school. He was a volunteer high school coach, and he was being too generous by buying the kids meals and giving them rides and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Apparently, that's a violation of whatever Florida high school football extra benefits rules that they have.
So Teddy Bridgewater was suspended from coaching high school football. This was a guy who apparently never actually submitted any retirement papers or anything like that, because since he got suspended, he has been signed by the Tampa Bay Bucks. I don't know. I have not looked at their depth chart. I have no idea if he has any shot at playing in the regular season for them, but he's at least starting preseason camp with the Tampa Bay Bucks. And so he stepped in front of the cameras yesterday, Teddy Bridgewater did, and of course he was asked about everything that went down with his high school team that he was suspended from and has now left, and giving these kids, it was, what do they call it, impermissible gifts?
Benefits, yeah.
Benefits. But it was like a ride home. It was like a meal. He was clearly, his heart was in the right place. And I loved what he had to say yesterday out at Bucks training camp when he was talking about it.
You know, I'm a father first before anything. And when I decided to coach, you know, those players became my sons. And I wanted to make sure that I just protect them in the best way that I can. And, you know, I think that's what came about. You know, Miami Northwestern is in a tough neighborhood. And, you know, sometimes things can happen when kids are walking home and different things like that. So I just tried to protect them, you know, give them, you know, a ride home instead of them having to take those dangerous walks. But I just want people to continue to see me for the person that I've been, you know, from the time I arrived in the NFL, from the time that I arrived at the University of Louisville, just a humble guy who has a big heart and a cheerful giver. There are a lot of changes, you know, you like to see. But, you know, I guess in due time, you know, those changes will happen. But until then, man, I can't change who I am, you know, because of the rules. Like, I have a big heart. You know, I get it from my mom. And, you know, I just always said that I was once those kids. You know, and I know what it's like to be in their shoes. I know what it's like to walk those halls at Miami Northwestern and to have your stomach growling and rumbling at 12 o'clock in the afternoon because you didn't have any lunch money or you don't get the free lunch. So I can't change who I am. You know, I'll still give to those kids just because, man, I know what it's like. And I'll still give, not only when I say give, it's not even about money. You know, it's about my time and my presence, because a lot of times you see your idol on TV and it's like, man, I wonder what it's like to be that person. But when they see me in the flesh and they see how, you know, I'm an open-spirited person and I'm happy and I'm around them and they fit right in with me and I fit in with them, and it's just hope. And I live by calling myself the neighborhood hope dealer, and I'm hoping that I'm, you know, dealing hope to everyone back in South Florida. And
the neighborhood hope dealer.
I would like 10 grams of hope, please. He seems like a really good guy. I've never met Teddy Bridgewater, but seems like a genuinely good, caring, compassionate dude. Now, I see why, you know, the rules are in place for whatever reason. You can say, hey, I'm just a compassionate dude. I saw this kid without a $40,000 SUV, and I thought, I need to give him a $40,000 right, SUV to come play for my high school football team. So
the lines can get blurred easily. Blur the lines I understand. A little bit.
I think Teddy Bridgewater's being pretty genuine here, and glad to see him back in the NFL. It looks like he's got a pretty good chance to be the backup to Baker Mayfield in Tampa. He's competing with Kyle Trask for that job. And I imagine he's got the inside track at being the backup to Baker in Tampa Bay. So that's a pretty cool story,
Kyle
Paulie.
Trask, never heard of him. But yeah, that is a Don't Do This on a Thursday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Paul, you did such a good job. We may just roll right into an early Rindle Report. We got a bunch of guests in the second half of the program. What other headlines are you going to bring us?
We got another Do This in Major League Baseball, and I have a pretty epic fail for somebody's final moment of their life.
I'm excited about this baseball story that you're going to bring us coming up next. Don't go away. Ben and Woods continuing on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. If you're not in our YouTube chat, you're missing out on some incredible discourse about Teddy Bridgewater, the neighborhood hope dealer. and all the different ways that he is selling hope to the kids in his neighborhood.
Do you like to smoke your hope?
Bumps of hope, keys of hope, smuggling kilos of hope across the border, injecting, mainlining hope. Yeah, we've got Teddy Bridgewater seems like a really good guy. That was our Don't Do This segment that we just talked about. Paulie's got some headlines, so I'm looking forward to it. If you missed it, obviously Padres 3-2 win over the Arizona Diamondbacks with a two-run ninth inning on a Ryan O'Hearn home run and a Jose Iglesias RBI single. Iglesias has he didn't do much in the first half of the season. Like,
he was just kind of there.
Like, we were so excited. Like, this guy hit 300, over 300 for the Mets last year. Was like, OMG. He was the life of the party in New York. And in San Diego, was like, what happened to that guy? He's hitting 200 and not doing much. But honestly, over the last month and a half, 2 months or so, Iglesias continues to deliver. Clutch situations, plays incredible defense. I mean, he has turned into an incredibly valuable bench piece for the San Diego Padres, and that's fun to see, because that's like an extra pickup that you didn't have to make at the trade deadline, because Iglesias has been so valuable for you in his bench role.
Yeah, he's been a key part in just coming off the bench, giving the team a spark. Like, he just seems like the ultimate clubhouse guy. It feels like everybody loves him and is pulling for him as well, and he's pretty damn good on the field as well. Like, he is really pulling his weight. He's a phenomenal defensive replacement. Whatever you like, whenever the ball is hit to him, you're not too worried about it. And it's been a lot of fun to see him start to click here recently.
Every good team, like championship contender, needs a Jose Iglesias type player.
Yeah.
So I like where the Padres are at. All right. We need to check traffic. This may be a two-part Rindle report, just because we're kind of close to the top of the hour here. But we'll get things started and maybe finish it up at the top of the hour right after Kelly's traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the motherfucking greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report with Paul Rindle.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rindle Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a hoy? Oh, yeah.
All right.
Happy Thursday, Benjamin.
Happy Thursday, Paulie.
All right, let's get right into it. We only got a few minutes here. This absolutely could have fallen into a do this as well this morning. But in Major League Baseball, Jen Powell is set to become the first woman to umpire in a Major League regular season game. She is working a few games this weekend between the Marlins and the Braves. She's got the bases are her duty on Saturday. There's a doubleheader down in Miami, in Atlanta. And then she'll be by on Sunday, and they'll be announced yesterday. So Sunday, she will be calling balls and strikes for the Marlins and the Braves. It's a historic moment in Major League Baseball, regular season game, and good for her. I'm excited.
Baseball's
awesome.
A little behind the curve on this one.
Yeah.
The NFL added female officials 10 years ago.
Yes.
And the NBA had their first female official, Violet Palmer, back in the late 1990s.
Yeah.
And you see them all the time. It's very regular. So it's almost surprising to me that it's taken so long for baseball to join the party. Congratulations to Jen. She'll work both games on the bases on Saturday, then behind home plate on Sunday for the Braves and the Marlins games. I mean, there's no reason why a woman wouldn't be as good as an umpire. I mean, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, judgment is judgment, and I'd imagine she's done well. She got promoted to crew chief in the minor leagues, which made her eligible to be called up as like that fifth extra person, which is why she's getting this opportunity. Has been in there since 2016 as a minor league umpire and put in her time. Climbed her way up the ladder and getting this opportunity. So I'm glad to see that she's going to be in the big leagues this weekend.
Yeah, like you said, man, MLB just a little bit behind things. It was 28 years ago that the NBA had their first female official, and then 10 years, like you said, in the NFL. She's 48 years old. She did some spring training games this year. She did some spring training games last year, and now she's getting her chance. Rob Manfred said in a statement from Major League Baseball that she's earned this opportunity, and we're proud of the strong example that she has set, particularly for all the women and young girls who aspire to roles on the field.
The women in our chat are chiming in. Beatrice says she might even be better than the guys. And Jocelyn says, as a woman, she's probably way better at judging. I mean, again, there's how many male umpires are there?
99.9%. Like,
yeah, whatever. I mean, they're all there. You've got to figure she's
all but one.
You got to figure she's already better than most of them, right? I mean, they're pretty bad. So right. I've got to think
it's
that
a low bar.
She jumps in pretty high on the scale whenever she arrives, because yeah, exactly. It's not like they have set the world on fire and being really, really good at their jobs over the years. Let's get some fresh blood in there, a little new gender in there.
Yeah, all right. And then we will wrap it up here. Got one final story, some audio from the Pacific Northwest, where a family was recently out on the water on a big boat, like a big sailboat, and there was probably 15, 20 people on this boat as they were spreading some ashes and saying goodbye to a loved one. And I got to think that this person had one hell of a sense of humor, because I know I would have been laughing if this happened to me. So what they were doing is they were spreading the ashes over the side of the boat into the water, and they were playing a song, The Impossible Dream by Frank Sinatra. Only problem was, whoever set up the speaker and had the music going, they didn't have Spotify Premium. They had the Spotify free version that includes ads.
Yeah.
And boy, did they get one hell of an ad after this. Listen to the end of the song and the ad that comes through, and you're going to hear everybody reacting. Spreading the ashes into the water.
This is the quickest way to clear out stuck poop.
The number one food for regular beings.
The fastest way to clear out stuck poop is by adding more fiber to your diet.
Not quite, unless you want to make things worse.
It's a little bit hard to hear. You heard the noise. And if it says something along, if you're having trouble with clogged poop.
I mean, it's like our show half the time, where we go into nausea, you know, upset stomach,
Every
diarrhea.
Morning at 5:59, yeah. You hear about loose, oily stools, yeah. Right before our show. It's awesome. It's really cool.
Well, whoever it was, shout out to their family. And that was pretty funny.
I thought it made me laugh.
All right, we'll come back. Padres with a big win. We got a bunch of guests. We'll set the table for the second half of the show when we return here on 97.3 The Fan.